Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest today from Christchurch is Colin Stokes. Colin, welcome to the program.
Yeah, g'day, Vincent.
Could you tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do down there in Christchurch, mate?
Pretty much just a Kiwi bloke. I'm an architectural designer. I've been currently tied up in a bit of a corrupt battle with the council for the last 4 years, and that's been taking most of my time up, so I haven't been getting much design work done in recent times.
Doesn't sound like you've been getting much sleep over it either.
No, sleep is very short as well, yes.
Well, tell us a little bit about the corruption. I mean, are you bound under sub judice BS or any stuff like that that will prevent you from telling the truth to the people?
No, fortunately, I can prove all the proof, so I can say whatever I like, because you can only get done if you are telling lies, which I don't.
Well, then by all means, regale me.
Okay. Well, I'm a small share owner of a little bit of land here, which is part of a new residential subdivision. What's happened here is that the developer that was in control of the whole of the subdivision, including our own, he did some backroom deals with the council, Christchurch City Council, and he radically departed from the rules required in the city plan, the planning rules, and also departed from the safety standards required for roading.
Who did he know in the council to give him the sign-offs?
Quite a few. There's a lot of people involved in there.
We'd be talking about a vertical integration of management, like there'd be a person on top of that person and that person. They've all got the same connections to this one guy?
Well, we went right to the top in the finish because we worked through the people that were making these decisions behind closed doors with the developer. We went right up to the top to the mayor. We went to Tony Merritt, who was the previous chief executive for the Christchurch City Council, who left with his tail between his legs. We went to Bob Parker, now Sir Bob Parker at the time as well. Told him that his staff were stealing the safety amenities off the community, such as cycle lanes, required turning medians on the roads, that type of thing. The whole of the roads were just bottlenecked down from the adjoining roads in the adjoining subdivisions. And effectively, they consented roads that were deemed to be seriously and significantly unsafe by a independent safety audit that was eventually requested by the council after about 4 years of trying to bring this to their attention.
Under the Agenda 21 public-private partnership protocols, if you build devices and things of that nature for a city council under contract, you are immune from criminal prosecution for any substandard work.
Well, what happens in these situations, the developer is always responsible for constructing the roads, and then they're vested to the council afterwards. What the developer needs to do is first get a resource consent for the roads, which requires them to be obviously designed to standards. And if they depart from those standards, they then need to get a resource consent to depart from the standards. The Resource Management Act requires that adversely affected parties need to be notified. So, of course, everybody that use roads are adversely affected if the roads being constructed are going to be below standards and deemed to be seriously and significantly unsafe.
And that's, of course, if they have qualifications in that particular area and know what safe from unsafe and don't just kind of go along to get along.
Well, the developer's surveyor actually wrote to the council advising the council that these narrow roads that they were building complied with New Zealand Standards 4404. However, that was wrong. They didn't. The council officer unfortunately believed what he was reading, and he allowed the roads to be constructed without a consent, illegally. So,
Wait a second. This was a power granted to the Christchurch City Council after the earthquake, I think it was. The Earthquake Recovery Minister, Jerry Brownlee, rushed this through Parliament under urgency, which means the council can pretty much do anything without a permit.
No, this actually goes back to 2009 and 2010 before the earthquakes even happened. So this was all underway. These roads were being built illegally before the earthquakes struck. So,
well, in that case, what that legislation did is it made it retroactively legal, didn't it?
Well, what the council staff did, they got around the Resource Management Act by forming a process that's unorthodox. Effectively, what they did, they denied that anybody was adversely affected by unsafe roads, including the residents like myself that would be forced to use these roads, the access to our current properties to be cut off, and we have to travel through these roads that were being built illegally and that are unsafe. So we're adversely affected by these roads. So we told the council right from the outset when we saw these roads being built to the non-complying standards, we said, what's going on here? These don't comply. We have to use these roads. We're adversely affected. You need to notify us so we can make submissions. They oppressed us. They denied us a legal say. They allowed the roads to be continued to be built illegally. And then they set about a process to retrospectively consent what was already built. Now, what they did to get that through, they council staff effectively became co-applicants with the developer, and they set about getting evidence to support the decisions they had already made behind closed doors. So they went out and solicited traffic engineers, etc., to all agree to them. And of course, if the traffic engineers didn't agree, they'd just go to a different traffic engineer.
That sounds like the Delphi technique. That's what they use in big public meetings and stuff. The chairman in meetings have a meeting beforehand and decide what the outcome is. And then anybody who says anything different during the public version of the meeting, they just don't count it in the end and say, thank you, everybody's had their submissions, this is what we're doing, which is what they were planning to do anyway.
That's exactly what they did. They set up a kangaroo court. They engaged, because they were going to consent these roads internally in the council until we kicked up a fuss. As I said, we went to the CEO of the council, went to the mayor, the councillors, we went to our local MP, Amy Adams. We put basically pressure on the council because we could see that these roads wouldn't be safe. So what they did, they decided, right, I will get a commissioner to make this decision for us, and then for that'll be independent. So they set up a meeting between the commissioner and they allowed residents to go along. But we had no legal standing whatsoever. We weren't allowed to give evidence. We weren't allowed to make legal submissions. We were allowed to talk to the commissioner when he let us. The commissioner, David Kirkpatrick, he mocked us when we pointed out dangerous aspects of the subdivision that hadn't been addressed. He basically asked us if we were going to get the community police there to sort it out and just flogged us off. So in the finish, we had no say whatsoever, but the council have been, ever since, the council staff have relied back on that, saying that we did have a say, but it was just at the kangaroo court to make it appear that way.
I'm surprised they didn't just tell you to harden up, it's only a little bit of risk.
Well, that's exactly what David Kirkpatrick did say.
We can't make this stuff up, bro.
Well, I pointed out a scenario where cars had to reverse out of garages that were designed on corners of the road. They were reversing out blind into traffic on the intersections. And the commissioner said, well, maybe they can reverse into the garages and then they'll come out forward blind. And that's when I said, well, the city plan doesn't allow for that either. And that's when he said, well, you're going to get the community police there or something. So it was just a nonsense. That he has since been promoted to be a district court judge, I believe.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he's going to be really, really handy in that particular area of law enforcement, considering his track record, don't you think?
I think so, yeah. Well, to go on, there was worse things that happened there as things progressed. What happened after that was that the developer made an application to increase the size of the commercial area that feeds off this narrow road that they'd already built. And that increased the traffic volume from about 6,000 to 11,000 vehicles per day on this spine road that was already too narrow and unsafe. What staff did then to consent the increase in the commercial area, which obviously increased the traffic, almost doubled it, they went to a traffic engineer, two senior managers at the council. They went to a traffic engineer and said to him, look, can you review the whole of the road network around this commercial area and this included roads and intersections up to a kilometre away. But they said, can you do that review of the road network, but don't review the specific bit of narrow spine road through here, which is the one that directly feeds the commercial area. They said, can you review the road network, but not review this narrow spine road? And the traffic engineer said, well, I suppose I can if that's what you want me to do. So anyway, later in the day, someone else from the council rung that traffic engineer and engaged him to do the safety review on the roads in relation to this commercial area. So he did that, and he didn't review that bit of spine road, but the report that the council staff gave to the commissioner stated that the traffic engineer had specifically reviewed that spine road. Are you hearing that? So what's happened there is that these council officers, two of them, went to the traffic engineer, told the engineer, do not review this road here, and then they told the commissioner that he had. Now, this is a road that was later given an independent safety order from Dr. Turner, a well-recognised traffic expert, and he revealed that there was 10 serious and significant safety issues with the road network through this subdivision.
How interesting. Would it by chance cost a lot of money in order to correct all of those small dangers that would fall upon the developers?
Well, they're actually large dangers. The serious and significant safety issues are deemed to be safety issues that cause frequent serious injury and death. So they're major safety issues that they identified. As far as remedying the roads, yes, they could be remedying. I provided a remedy to the council, which simply required insetting parking each side of the road that was built. There's still currently paddocks out here. So it's not a great issue to actually just indent parking outside of the carriageway that's built. That would allow for the required safety amenities be brought back into the road, such as cycle lanes and the turning medians. They still wouldn't be quite up to standard, but they'd certainly be a lot safer than what they've currently got. With building narrow roads, they're obviously a lot cheaper to build. They didn't have the safety features in them, the indented parking, the medians, all the rest of it. So they're not only cheaper to build, but they also provide a lot more land for the developer to profit from in cutting sections up. No problem with developers making money, that's not a problem. But when it's at the risk of public safety and when there's risks of public life and injury at stake, it just doesn't cut it with me.
And this is part of your kind of professional background. Did you ever work at the council doing similar work, or is it just part of your nomenclature doing architecture?
As a designer, I've had a lot of experience in resource consenting, making applications to the council in relation to developments and housing. So I've got a good background knowledge of the resource management.
So if this was a court trial, you'd be considered an expert witness, you know, like a police witnessing a murder or a crime or something like that, who have an expert way of looking at it because they're experienced and they have the technical know-how.
Yes, I have been accepted in the Environment Court to give evidence in relation to minor traffic matters. So, yes, it is accepted that I have experience in that field.
Well, who benefits from ignoring your evidence that you're bringing forward?
Well, the benefit is the developer, and obviously I'm not sure what's happened between the developer and the council staff. But
what do you think happened? Do you have any allegations you'd like to put out?
It's a little hard to say. I can't understand how something that could have been fixed so easily at the start, because we raised this issue as soon as we saw it, and we were just staggered that whenever we pointed out an issue that could be easily resolved, there was just more and more bullshit thrown back at us. And the council just created this huge fight against us. It's cost myself and some other residents around here in excess of $60,000 fighting the council. The council were fighting against us to eliminate public cycle lanes and safety amenities. They were fighting against the community to not have these required safety elements. So effectively fighting against the community to steal away the amenities. to favor.
And this is before the earthquake, you say?
This is before the earthquake, and of course the earthquakes happened and it continued after that.
If anything, it probably continued and got worse.
Well, it did get worse. What happened was when we started exposing the faults, council staff started engaging lawyers to say they'd done nothing wrong.
How much money are these lawyers making? Because I recall up in the Occupy Auckland thing, the council lawyer that they had prosecuting Occupy Auckland, which amounted to nothing, cost them nearly $250,000 or something.
We'd be well over this in the council trying to consent these non-complying roads here.
So somebody's using it as a gravy train, and it's only in their best interest that you keep getting ignored, because that way they keep getting paid.
Well, I actually accused the lawyer from Simpson Grierson that the council engaged. I accused him of lying in a public council meeting. Bob Parker told me that I shouldn't use that word. I told him that if I didn't use that word, I'd be lying.
Sounds about right, eh?
Well, and then Bob Parker said,
Now remember, Sir Bob Parker said.
Well, he wasn't Sir at that stage.
Oh, well, now he is.
Right. But anyway, he then told me, well, I can't say that because they're not there to defend themselves. And I said, well, the lawyer is here to defend himself, and pointed to him. And I said, he can sue me if he likes. I'm quite happy. In fact, I'd like him to, because I can prove he's lying. And, I can't afford to take him to court for lying. It's not my role to anyway. But certainly if he tries to sue me for defamation or whatever Bob Parker was warning me of, well, good luck to him, because I can prove he is a liar.
So in this respect, you've got, let me just see if I've got all the elements in the equation here, because I've interviewed a number of people. Christchurch, before the earthquake, was a shambles, and it was corrupt, and basically you couldn't get anything done unless you had the right connections, and if you have the right connections, you can pretty much do anything, especially if you're a developer, especially if there's a lot of money involved. And then after the earthquake, it's only accelerated the process of corrupting any fair hearings that people might have, and now people are in homes that are, you know, substandard, and can't get their insurance payouts to boot, as well as having to deal with a corrupt council that won't even take responsibility for the things that they do.
Well, yes, the whole consenting debacle we had with building consenting, it's the same thing with the consenting roading here, and it's the same manager that was responsible for resource consenting and consenting these roads as it was with the building. He's since been promoted in the council. He's now their number one legal advisor to the acting chief executive.
Well, it seems to me in New Zealand political history that he who is most corrupt gets promoted the fastest because he's capable of making the most money for his corrupt doggy masters.
Well, I don't know how it works in there, but I've been disappointed with the elected council that were brought in to fix the systemic issues right through. They haven't done anything to resolve it either. I've put this evidence in front of them of senior managers going to traffic engineers, telling them not to review roads that they knew were unsafe, and then advising the commissioner he had. I've told them about that. I've presented the evidence to the elected council, and they have failed to act. Now, I thought when Bob Parker's council was effectively dismissed that Leanne Dalzell's council would step up to the plate, but I'm starting to receive the same sort of problems there.
It's kind of like meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Well, yes, and except everyone's getting promoted up a notch.
Yeah, the worst. It's much like on a stagnant pond column. Where does the scum go? All the way to the top, and it sits there. It blocks out all the healing light from the sky, and everything beneath the layer of scum withers and dies and gets corroded.
Excellent. I like the way you put that. The community board's been the one shining light in this. Rickon Wigram Community Board under Mike Moore. They've been fighting very hard for the residents, but the elected council, unfortunately, aren't taking full notice of them either.
And I'm acting under the assumption that this is the first kind of, you know, unbiased media coverage you've gotten on this issue as well, where you're not subjected to, like, maybe a 30-second soundbite or omission completely.
this is the, certainly the best chance I've had. CTV has had a bit of a look at it, but the press has been absolutely rubbish. They have done some articles on it, but they tend to favour the perspective of the developer.
It's probably because they're afraid of getting sued themselves. Because did you know that even if you sue somebody for no good reason or whatever, even if they're telling the truth, it'll still cost them X amount of dollars to defend the fact that they're telling the truth? And this is how the big corporate business scumbaggery in this country keep the media off their tails. Me, I'm just reckless and stupid. When they come after me, I'm screwed, but... You know, in the meantime, I'll do what I can.
The problem I have with the press is they tell me that we can't print the truth because it's corrupt. And I said, well, how can we get the truth out there? I said, I can't tell lies. I've got to tell you what the truth is. And they said, well, what you're saying is we can't publish. And I said, well, how are the public supposed to know what's going on?
Well, you listen know, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show for one, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not joking.
Good on you. Brilliant, though. It's good that you can bring these matters to light, and
I don't know, Colin. It's I'm not sure how much I'm bringing to light, but the one thing I am certain of is that I'm capable of helping the people who are independently on their own bringing these things to light have a chance to actually express it. And even if nobody listens to it, it actually I find it always feels better for the person to be able to at least say it. And have somebody who's not bloody barking BS at you or making excuses or saying that, oh, it's just evil, you've got to accept it, you know, and being a frickin' slave.
You're spot on there because it's a very hard battle because no one really cares. That's the issue. But they think, because they know it's so bad what I'm saying, they just, I don't know if they can believe it's true or they just don't want to. So they finish up just ignoring you.
Well, they've just got that cognitive dissonance, bro. It's like, oh, I've got my entire worldview that's been built up by going to university and high school and primary school and everything like that and watching television my entire life and watching mainstream media and listening to what they say on the radio. How could that all be incorrect considering it's packaged for me by the government and major mega scumbaggery corporations that own my entire life? You must be wrong instead of all the other things that are messing up my life for the entirety of my existence. You must be wrong. Therefore, I'm going to attack you instead of looking at reality.
Yep, that's about it.
Through their source of rejection of truth, it'll often basically put a huge weight on the shoulders of the people who are telling the truth to the point where it'll either frustrate you, grind you to a halt, or realize that it's like triage on the battlefield. There's some people who you're just wasting your resources on that you can't save anyway, and you've got to just listen to the people and talk to the people who you can actually make a difference in their lives. Because I don't know about you, Colin, but I'm a student of history, and as far as I'm concerned, as far as I've seen, the only time when anything has ever changed for the better throughout history, it has not been the masses leading the way. It has always been one man or one woman who just says no, and all the other people just fall in line behind them eventually, but they usually only fall in line long after that person's had their life destroyed, their reputation dragged through the mud, and all of their resources and all of their social capital and everything's been thrown out. Only then do people fall in behind you, because then it doesn't cost them anything to do the right thing.
Yes, I can see your point there. That's why people like you need to get this message out to help people like me.
Yeah. And if I might say so, Colin, people like you are the ones who do the quote-unquote real work in terms of exposing corruption in this country. I'm just a glorified radio jockey parakeet, more or less. My job's just to sit here, work the little levers of the machine, and make sure that that voice of yours is amplified. I mean, there's a lot more to it than that, but basically, had there not been any work, suffering, research, council meetings and things of that nature, which you'd endured in order to possess this incredibly hard-won knowledge and experience, I wouldn't have a show, bro. So thank you very much for your contributions to it. And also thank you for your contributions to the country and, of course, Christchurch City, because I find that people like you are greatly underappreciated for the importance of the work that you do. You really are the glue that is actually holding the decent New Zealanders together from all of these corrupt scum that beset our nation. And I thank you, Colin.
Well, thank you.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood doesn't go ahead. Make my news. This is a listener-supported broadcast predominantly, so please go to the homepage and either take through the Kiwi Bank account there, give us a monthly gift of whether that be $5, $10, $20. One guy does $100 a month gift to the show. I don't know what the heck his problem is. Maybe he just really hates scumbaggery and wants to see it exposed by any means necessary. I do. So go to the homepage. There's a bank account and PayPal buttons there as well for you to make your donations, and also regular gifts to the broadcast to make sure that we stay on air and keep doing the work that the mainstream media simply won't do. We will see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. And Colin, just quickly before we go, where exactly can people find you? Do you have your do you have a website or a blog or something of that nature where people can access the details in their entirety?
I'm a bit green on the internet and complex side, but there is a guy that's taken interest recently who has started a web page. If you Googled Delamain, that's the adjoining subdivision, you'll find the details there. Delamain Action Group, I believe they're called. But there's a few details on that, so they may be able to find some more information out from that. Otherwise, I'm pretty easy to find. I'm in the phone book if people want to know more.
Are you on Facebook, or do you have an email you'd like to give out on here?
People can email me on Stokesy, Stokesy, at extra.co.nz.
All right, there we go. Stokesy at extra.co.nz. If you're living in Christchurch or around the world, or if you just want to actually research into this a little bit, I'm sure Colin has large quantities of documentation on his computer and PDFs and all of that kind of stuff. people like you always keep documentation on freaking everything. That's why the council hates you so much, because they can't get away with it forever.
The good thing is that the new council under Leon Dalzell, they now tape all their council meetings, so there's actually video footage now too, which is good. If we had that under the previous council, that would have been very interesting with some of the information I presented to Bob Parker and his team.
Yeah, always have a recording device present. That's what my advice is. Whenever you're dealing with anybody in an official capacity, whether you're having a conversation with your lawyer, a police officer, a counsellor, a politician, doesn't matter, have that stuff recorded, bro, because they'll always deny whatever they said if what they said implicates them in some kind of criminal activity.
Well, I actually have a policy in the council that they aren't allowed to admit liability or that they've made mistakes.
sound dodgy at all.
I had a few correspondences back and forward to the council lawyer, and I caught him out on three matters that he kept getting wrong, and I finally got him to the corner whereby he couldn't admit that he was wrong, but I'd proven it. So I actually asked him a question under the Official Information Act. I says, please accept you're wrong on this, or if you haven't got the ability to, because you're not allowed to, please admit that you don't have the ability to. So he said, well, yes, I don't have the ability to admit I'm wrong, but furthermore, I'm not. A lawyer. He had to say that he's not, because that's what he just admitted he had to say.
I've got four words for you, Mr. Lawyer. If you say so. Thank you very much, Colin Stokes, and we will see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.